Spiritual Law of Nature call, our Deep Waters call with Alex Lloyd. And my name is Johanna Chan. I am opening up for Alex today. And we just want you to sit back and listen. We are having this call so that we can interact with you. Alex is here to answer any questions or any comments you have about the topics that he's discussing, and I'm sorry, I don't know what the one is for today, but before we hear from Alex, I'm going to go ahead and share this disclaimer. This presentation is for education and informational purposes only, and since we're going to be talking about issues of health and well-being, we wanted to make sure that you understand this information is not intended to heal or cure anything. Everything in the presentation are the opinions of Dr. Alex Lloyd, myself, Johanna Chan, possibly one of our other practitioners, and you, of course, if you share today. You should always check with a licensed healthcare provider about any specific health concerns you may have. So, Alex, what is the topic today?
Yeah, the topic today is terrorism, but the byline is, do you know a closet terrorist? And what really struck me, I was going to do a thing about terrorism because I've been asked by a lot of people to give my two cents on that. And that was really all that was on my mind and all that I was researching. But during the course of my research, it really struck me how the definition of terrorism is almost identical to the definition of abuse. And there have been about a million people over the last 50 years killed by terrorism, meaning, you know, suicide bombs and airplane bombs and all kinds of things like that, about a million people over the last 50 years. But the statistics on people who have been either physically or emotionally abused is basically 3 out of every 4 people, one or the other or both. I've had both. My wife has had both. Most of the people I've worked with have had both. So 3 out of every 4 people have either been physically, sexually, or emotionally abused, or 2 of those, or often even all 3 of those. And it has a similar effect of terrorism. People who have been involved in a terror attack, even if they weren't in the attack, but someone that they loved was, are typically terrorized the rest of their life, which means they have a major trauma that significantly and consistently affects them, giving them stress in their body, negative thoughts, and negative feelings throughout the rest of their life. Well, abuse does almost exactly the same thing as far as our physical body, our thoughts, and our feelings. And so people who have been abused, whether it was intentional or not, and sometimes it's not intentional, they are terrorized for the rest of their life until they fix those traumas, and they can be fixed. That's what I've been trying to help people do for 30 years, but until they're fixed, the person is going to go on being terrorized. So to me, there's a couple of things. Number one, do you know a closet terrorist who hurts other people, either intentionally or unintentionally? Are you a closet terrorist? Do you hurt other people intentionally or unintentionally? And I would assert that is one of the worst things you can ever do in your life, is to hurt other people. In contrast, we want to be a positive on everyone in our life. They're glad they know us. We're someone that they smile when they think of, want to spend time with, you know, all those kind of things. The problem is that's just not the reality. 3 out of 4 have been abused, and it's typically in the home or the school or someplace in that person's upbringing. And then the very worst of that is that when they grow up, abusers are much, much more likely to abuse than people who have not been abused. So if anger was constantly put on a kid, when that kid grows up, there's a real good chance as an adult that person will inflict anger on others. So anger begets anger. Sadness begets sadness. Sometimes it's a different one. Sometimes anger begets sadness, but it's typically a negative. So I think in this subject of terrorism, we need to take it seriously. We need to try to prevent any terrorist attack anywhere. I'm 100% for that. But let us also pay attention to the one that's not a million people over 50 years, but that's 3 out of every 4 people on planet Earth. And those people are just trying to get by in their lives, very often not even knowing what is holding them back or causing the health problem. But many times that's what it is. So that's sort of a general overview, but watch the entire YouTube segment for the details, because there's a lot of details. I think it's like 1 hour and 20 minutes long, and typically they're like 20 minutes long. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot there because I believe this is a critical issue in most people's lives. If 3 out of every 4 have been abused in some way, that means even if you are the 1 in 4, most of the people you know and are in your own family have been impacted by this. So I don't think there's anyone on planet Earth that is not impacted with this, either themselves or people that they know, love, care about, work with, are neighbors to, are part of an organization with, whatever. And we need to start dealing with these issues and healing them, so we can start, we can break this cycle, and it switch to 3 out of 4 have not been abused and are not terrorized and inflicting that on other people now as an adult. So that's it for me.
All right. Well, thank you, Alex. Now, if anyone has would like to make any comments or interact with Alex regarding this topic or any topic for that matter, you can press *2 on your phone. That's going to raise your hand. And we'll be able to unmute your line, and you'll be able to ask Alex a question or share a comment. So *2 is going to raise your hand. If you are online, you can fill in the field for the question, and Taya will read that to Alex. I'm not able to do the controls today, but Taya will read that to Alex, and he'll be able to address your question. So *2 on the phone or type your question in the field.
Okay. So as Johanna said, I will be assisting here in navigating the hands up for the callers and the questions that are on the Q&A in the chat box. So there is I'm calling out the last 4 digits of your phone number. This is 5870, and your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning, Taya. This is Marilyn, and good morning, Alex.
Hi.
And good morning, Johanna.
Hi, Marilyn.
Alex. Good morning, Johanna. Alex, thank you for this one. There, I don't think I can say how grateful I am for this one and all the areas it's shown me to heal. Yeah, I particularly appreciate where you talked about the turmoil that you feel when you don't want to be emotionally abusive to somebody else, that you are, and all the turmoil that you feel when you don't, you suck it up and you try not to, but you really want to say it. This is just, I think, you know, this has just been so helpful listening to this particular video and what you said. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah.
Alex, you might be muted.
Sorry, I was muted. It's so prevalent in the world, you know, that 3 out of every 4, it's so prevalent that it's become normalized. And I think with something like this, that's the most dangerous thing that could ever happen, is it becomes normalized. And we basically don't talk about it. And, you know, in virtually, I used to specialize in relationship counseling, which was a lot of marriage, a lot of family. And it was unbelievable to me the first few years that I did that, because it seemed like every single family almost had family secrets. And the family secrets, about 50% of the time, was abuse. Now, sometimes it was emotional, not physical or sexual, and a lot of those times, because it was emotional, the perpetrators discounted it. It's, oh, that's not anything. I mean, she needs to grow up. That's just part of life. Well, it is not part of life, or at least it shouldn't be. Being mean and unkind to someone hurts them. Not just a rare person. It hurts anybody who undergoes that, and it hurts every single time it happens. And man, I don't know anything we could do better as far as trying to make some of the biggest problems in the world better, trying to make some of the biggest problems get better, than to shine a great big huge spotlight on this issue and say, hey, if you are one of those 3 and 4, we want to help. And here's some things that we can do. Here's a number you can call. Here's a group that is for people who are either in the 3 and 4, or they have loved ones that are, and so they're having to deal with it anyway because of the loved one. Because if we start making this issue better, it's going to float up all boats. It's going to make depression get significantly better all over the world. It's going to make anxiety get significantly better all over the world. We're going to see health problems start to decrease in the instance that they occur, as if that issue were flipped upside down, where 1 in 4 have been abused instead of 3 in 4. It would make an astronomical difference in everything in the world, including money. I mean, think of how much less money would be spent on pharmaceuticals and all that sort of thing if illnesses decreased by 50%, which I think they absolutely could, because these are the things, more than anything else, that send that message to the hypothalamus in the brain and kick on our stress response. And it doesn't get turned off until these issues are dealt with and healed. So I completely agree with you, Marilyn.
Yeah. For me, I found when I listened to, I had a lot of unforgiveness towards my parents because of the fact, because my parents were very religious, and I was constantly in trouble for doing the wrong thing. And,
yeah, me too.
I felt it for it.
But let me add this, Marilyn. Hope, my wife, she grew up and she was the kid that never put a foot out of place. But yet she grew up with those same abuse issues as well. So I think in a lot of situations, it really doesn't matter what the kid is doing. They're going to catch it no matter what, because that's where the parent or the adult or the school teacher or the minister, or that's where that person is, and they can't contain themselves. That anger pours out, that selfishness pours out. So I think no matter what happened to you sometimes, as a kid, it's you're going to catch it.
Yeah. The one question I do have, though, is this, do you heal this generation, or is this simply because you experienced this growing up that you heal?
I would do both. I would I would, when you do a trilogy or memory engineering or whatever, I would focus on the issue that you know about and even focus on details of it. The more you feel it, the more powerful the healing will be. But then I would also pray that all the generational issues that are related to this that I don't know about will be healed as well. And then what I think is just worth its weight in gold is contact one of our practitioners and let them find hidden memories in your life that are in the unconscious that you don't know about, but they are these type memories that keep spiking your stress. So, but you can start just with yourself and saying, please let all the generational issues related to this or something like this, let those be healed as well.
Okay, thank you. There was also, I call it a side benefit, towards the end of the Believers one, you talked about how we believe lies about memories and like the house burns down and I can never feel, I can never find a place to feel safe in again. When I was 4, our house nearly burnt down. And
yeah.
When you said that, I went, ah. And so, yeah, that's something else that's come up for me to heal from this, just listening to this call.
Yeah, and one thing I would do is take an inventory, is go back through your whole life and say, okay, what are the traumas, what are the negative turning points, what are the things that hurt the most that I think, boy, I'd never want to go through that again, and write them all down and rate them 0 to 10, and then one at a time start working on those until you can't think of any that still have a negative charge on them for you.
Thank you. Yeah, but yeah, thank you so much for this particular video. It's just so much healing that's coming up for me out of this. I think, like you said, doing this is life-changing.
Well, it's my pleasure. I need it more than anybody. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, I'm going to the next caller. The last 4 digits are 1664 from California. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Alex. It's Glenn. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Glenn. How's California?
We've been having great weather this whole week, and today's no different. So I'm very blessed to be here. January's about 70 degrees in midwinter, so I'm very blessed.
Oh, why did you have to say that? That's great, Glenn.
Give you something to look for. I want to ask you a question. And it has to do with what's happening in the country now, and I'm going to phrase it a certain way so nobody will be offended.
Yeah.
So I have a part of my family that traditionally has been difficult to get along with, but we've been able to get along most of my life. And recently they've accused my family of stealing from them or deceiving them or wronging them. So when we asked them, what are you talking about? And they said, well, you did this, you did that, you did this, you did that, and that's the evidence. So I say, okay, let's examine that. You accuse me of doing X, okay? Here's the evidence that I didn't do X. So that's not right. You accuse me of Y, I didn't do Y. Here's the evidence I didn't do Y. And so for all 5 things. And I said, so you see now what you're offended about and what you think was stolen from you was not stolen from you. And here's the evidence. And they say, I don't care what evidence you show me. I believe you stole from me. And I believe you're trying to take advantage of me. And I'm going to react and I'm going to get revenge. And you see, this is all a big mistake. There's no need for this. They go, nope. You stole from me, and that's the way it is. I'm not going to look at any more evidence. So what do we do? What do you do in a situation where now you've got a part of your family that's going to escalate chaos, and possibly they've escalated violence before, they may do it again. As God-fearing spiritual people, how do we handle that?
Well, first of all, I think what you're talking about is a form of brainwashing, or some people would call it cult thinking, or a cult mindset. And one of my favorite examples is a client I had one time who was a grown man, about 45 years old, very intelligent, good job, very, very highly regarded by everybody that knew him, and for good reason, one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, all right? But he had a brainwashing or a cult mindset when it came to Ford versus Chevrolet. And his dad was a Chevrolet guy, his granddad was a Chevrolet guy, his great-granddad was a Chevrolet guy, his cousins were Chevrolet guys, you know, and it was actually a deal in their family. I mean, Chevrolet, they were Chevrolet people, you know. And one time it was kind of funny. One of the gentleman's friends brought him the latest consumer reports and the latest it was the other really big rating one. I can't remember the name of it right now, but where they rate all the new vehicles and all that. And in both publications in this particular year, and this is years ago, Ford was like number one or two or three. They were up high as far as trucks, and this was about trucks. And Chevrolet was like at the bottom of the list. And the articles talked about why and what the people that test drove them experienced, and that, you know, this isn't just this is just a kind of a down year for Chevrolet. They're not always like this, but for some reason, that's the way it is this year. Okay. Well, the gentleman who was my client, he would not, could not accept that, and I mean, he went all the way in arguing this to absolutely ridiculous extremes of major government conspiracy theories and everything else. And everybody's just sitting there with their mouth open looking at him, because it was so untypical of this guy who's so nice and level-headed and easygoing and would never do anything to hurt anybody. And his face was all red. And, I mean, he was blowing and going, I call it, and talking almost like a crazy person, but only about this one area of his life. And I've seen that many, many times, Glenn, and most of us, I would say, in fact, have some area where we have some degree of brainwashing. I grew up in a religious cult mindset situation. And it took me a couple of decades to fully recover from that. And when I was extracting myself from it, I went through 6 months of night terrors, where I would wake up every night screaming, and the sheets would be soaking wet. 6 months, virtually every night. And it's because I was, you know, kind of pulling myself away from this cult mindset programming that I'd had all my life. And so the nightmares were, I'm going to hell and all these horrible things are going to happen to me because I'm, you know, not going by the those endless rules and regulations and all that sort of thing. So to me, there's everybody's got something. And typically, a person who feels very negative inside is going to have negative energy, and they're going to say negative things. They almost can't help it, all right, because that's what they're feeling. And typically, people like that, they will feel negative, they will grumble, they will, you know, do all that kind of stuff. But then if they meet a new person that they want to have a certain impression of them, they'll switch and they'll put on a smile and they'll be like, you know, everything is wonderful. But then as soon as that phone call's over or as soon as that interaction is over, then they kind of relax again and go back to that negativity. So the only way I know of to fix that is to heal that negativity, which is what I've tried to do with people for 30 years. Now, obviously, if they're not willing to participate in that, and it doesn't sound like these people are, all you can do, Glenn, is say, okay, regardless of what they do, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to speak the truth in love. I'm going to do the truth in love as best I can. I'm going to think the truth in love. And whatever they do, they do. And, I mean, I would stand up for myself. I wouldn't let them run over me. Every time they bring it up, I would try to stay calm and to continue to say, okay, here's the evidence for this. And if they say, well, I don't want to hear the evidence, then I don't know. I would say whatever is in truth and love in your mind and heart after them saying that. But don't ever go to their place with them, which is falsehood and fear, okay? So don't let their falsehood and fear take you to falsehood and fear. You stay in truth and love no matter what. And what I've experienced over and over and over is that if you heal all the junk inside of you and you are predominantly in your mind and heart in an inward state of love, joy, and peace, they can't hurt you. They can't. And typically, and I've seen this a bunch of times, and I've done it myself, where the person was into fear and falsehood, and I was in a place of love, joy, and peace, and I walked straight up to them, nose to nose, eyes to eyes, and started speaking the truth in love. And I mean, Glenn, it's like you had just dumped 1,000 ants in their pants or something. They couldn't look me in the eye. They had to get away from me. And so I would say you become a person of love, joy, peace. Never let them pull you over to the fear and falsehood. And you stand up for yourself, but you do it in kindness, in truth, in love. And you never come off that spot. You don't ever go to their fear and falsehood and anger with them. And usually over time, the truth and love will win. But most people can't keep doing it because they've got too much fear and falsehood inside of them. So they try it for a little while, but then they give up and get angry at them. And now you're down wrestling in the mud hole with them, and that's never going to end well. But if you can stay in truth and love in your mind and heart, no matter what they do, you will win.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna take that advice and not engage with the people who want to argue or want to tell the world that they're right and everybody else is wrong.
Or write them a letter. Write them a letter that is stating the facts, but also kind, and make a copy of it. Let them know you're making a copy of it, that anytime anybody wants to know about this issue, you'll share that because it is, in your mind, the evidence and the truth about the situation. Sometimes that'll shut them down.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we documented this thing to the point of absurdity, and it just
okay.
You know, don't want to discuss it. Just no, that's not right. No, you're fooling us. It's just that mindset of, it's like what you said, the whole brainwash
yeah.
thing.
I would agree. Don't get in the mud puddle with them.
Okay. I may have an additional expanded question next week, but for now, I'll take this teaching. Thank you, Dr. Alex.
Okay. God bless you, Glenn.
God bless you.
Thank you, Glenn. Moving to the next caller, and last four digits of your phone number is 9037 from Florida. Your line is open.
Hey, this is April.
Hey, April, how are you?
Hey, Dr. Alex, doing real good. How are y'all?
I'm good. I hadn't heard you in a while. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, thank you. Same here. So I was just going to say, you know, this had recently come up. I mean, not just in the, I know that y'all were also, you know, addressing the current events topic, which is so interesting to me. And in my own family, we have, you know, there's abuse in the history, in our family history, and we were just talking about this, and it's incredible, and you're right, it does affect everybody. And that I just wanted to say thank y'all for being there, for what y'all do, and has helped me so much. I really, really hope to get my family caught on with this. I'm trying to post your guys' call information every day on Facebook. I try to, or on every week, sorry, on Facebook, to try to, you know, get people to come on the call and learn about this stuff. And I was just going to say, I probably already know the answer to this, but just so it would, you know, maybe you want to address it or something for some other callers or some new people. How does the difference between control and giving up control, or maybe giving up the end result, which I know you've talked about before, have to do or with the current events, or I guess y'all were talking about, you know, terrorism or whatever.
Yeah. Well, when I talk about that, my opinion is that the great majority of the time, we are supposed to be focused on now, on the present moment, or the next 30 minutes, as I like to say, not on what Hope did or didn't do 2 days ago that irritated me, or on my fear of what's going to happen in the future related to money or finances or a health problem or something like that. Well, we're supposed to very rarely go there, and really the only time we're supposed to go into the past is to learn from it, and then the only time we're supposed to go into the future is to make plans so that we're doing things, you know, in an ordered, disciplined way, not just, you know, by the seat of our pants. You know, if you're going on a trip, you make plans. You've got to get a place to stay. You make sure the oil has been changed in your car and your tires are good and stuff like that. That's what I'm talking about. But 90% of the time, or maybe even more, we're supposed to be focused in the present moment. And that is really the only time you can truly be in love, joy, and peace is when you're in the present. It's very difficult to do that if you're focused on something negative in the past or focused on something negative in the future. But you can go experience love, joy, peace in the present. And so to me, that's one big difference, is for a person's focus to be doing what is right, doing what is win-win-win for everyone concerned with no losers, doing what is love-based instead of what is fear-based, which means predominantly instead of deciding on what to do by the pleasure it brings me or the pain that it makes go away from me, being focused on what's best for Hope and my kids and maybe people that read my books or ask for advice or come in as clients. My focus is there, not on how can I get more pleasure and stop some pain, whether physical or emotional, that I'm going through. That generally leads to more pain and less pleasure when you do that. It's a paradox. But most people can't just do that. they have so much negativity in them. And then you've got the 3 out of 4 who've been abused in some way. So if that's not been healed, then their hypothalamus likely is constantly flipping the stress switch on, because just about everything in their life would relate to that abuse or trauma. Okay, so I think for most people these days, they can't just say, okay, I'm going to start thinking positive thoughts instead of negative. It just doesn't typically work. You got to do some work and clean up your heart, clean up your mind, get rid of some of that negativity. And once you do that to a certain point, then you are able to say, hey, this is crazy. I'm making myself miserable by thinking these negative thoughts all the time. I'm going to focus in the present, and I'm going to try to be positive and focus on what is good and what is right, what is beautiful, what is uplifting, encouraging, and now you can do it because you got rid of enough of that negativity and healed some of those lies you were believing. But that place is different for everybody. For some people, that would take a week of work. For some, it might take a year of work. But however long it takes, it's absolutely worth it. Because once you get to that place where you can truly let go of control of the end result, let it go to God, let it go to love, and relax in the present moment in love, joy, and peace, man, you feel a freedom. You feel a lightness. You feel, you look outside and it looks beautiful, when the day before you looked outside and it looked terrible, even though it was exactly the same weather. The difference was inside of you, not at how you were looking at it, not necessarily what you were looking at. So those are some of the things I think I would say in that regard, April.
Thank you, Dr. Alex, and it's always a pleasure and a great honor talking to you.
Well, great to talk to you. God bless you.
Thank you. Okay. the next caller, I think he's a stranger to you, Alex. I think he's new to us. Web call. Santo, your line is open.
Hey, Alex, how's it going?
Santo, my Canadian flash.
I couldn't resist. I was here, and I figured I've never called in ever on a Wednesday call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so one of the things that came up for me, because I know in extreme cases, you know, when there's abuse and obviously severe terrorism going on, not to say it's easier to know what to do, but you kind of know when you have to remove yourself from the situation and, you know, kind of take extreme action. One of the things, you know, I struggled with, especially at a younger age, was things that were more on a smaller scale, where you're kind of in a, I want to say, a bind, where it's like if you bring something up, it kind of feels like you're making something big out of something small. Like, say, someone who's teasing you at school or bullying you at school or something.
Right.
Where if you bring something up, it's like, oh, like, really, that's bothering you this much that you have to bring it up, versus, you know, trying to identify whether it's a fear that's living in you that you just have to heal. So it's kind of finding that balance between kind of the little things that are bothering you every day and how to address that in truth and love with other people, or whether it's just something you have to kind of address in and of yourself.
Well, I don't think any of us ever get to the place where it's perfect. You know, you've heard the thing, it's not a destination, it's a journey. And actually, I think it is a journey and a destination. Not that the destination is on the top of the mountain and you can only experience love, joy, and peace when you get to the top of the mountain. But what I have seen over and over and over is once you get up so high on the mountain, now you can be in a place of love, joy, and peace. Even if you never reach the top of the mountain, once you reach a certain place on your own mountain, everything is shifted and you can be positive instead of negative. But I think it's really pretty simple. When Hope was depressed for 12 years, she read so many books. I know it was in the hundreds. It may have been over 1,000. I've never counted them. We still got them, though, and they're everywhere. And she's a fast reader. She could read a book a day. And it was very normal for me to hear a yell and then a thump as the book landed that she threw across the room after she finished it. And I would typically say, "Hey, what's going on? Are you okay?" And she would say something like, "Does he or does she, whoever the author was, did they think I'm an idiot?" And I'd say, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, they're telling me think happy thoughts instead of bad thoughts, and that's the solution. Don't they think I've tried that 1,000 times? I can't do it." Well, on the other hand, I had some abuse growing up, and I've documented some of that in one or two of my books, but not nearly nothing like Hope did growing up. So by and large, if I read a book and it said think this instead of that, I could do it, or I could come close to doing it. Okay, so I think one of the most basic lines in the sand is if you try to live in the present in love, if you try to be a positive person, if you try to be kind and helpful, if you try to be the same way internally that you are externally to other people. So many people put on a mask in order to be socially acceptable. It's not really what they feel inside. But if you are able to do those things, then do them. But most people can't just make a change like that. So if you try to do that common sense stuff, and you just keep having the thought, "I can't do it. It doesn't work. I can't do it right." Then that means you need some help, and you need to get some tools. You need to put on the rubber gloves and the mask and go down into the basement and start cleaning up the junk in your heart and mind. And there's no substitute for that except prayer. And I believe prayer is the most important and powerful thing on planet Earth. And I believe in Tevye prayer from Fiddler on the Roof, where Tevye started a prayer in the morning and just prayed all day long, basically. And that's what I try to do. And that is the most important thing to me that I do. And I have seen prayer by itself totally change that stuff. But if it isn't, then get some of these tools that can do things in minutes and days and weeks that used to take years, and clean out the junk. Now, one caveat about that, even with tools that work so much better than what we used to have, it's still probably not going to be fun.
Yeah.
Because you're opening up issues that hurt. So understand that from the outset. It is going to hurt to do that. But the question is, do you want to hurt for a few days or weeks or maybe months, or do you want to hurt the rest of your life? Because if you don't ever deal with that stuff and resolve it, then you will be struggling with it the rest of your life, guaranteed.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I can definitely attest, even before I even knew what trilogy was, with all the fears I had when I was younger, just prayer in and of itself made a massive difference. And obviously when I found the tools, it brought it to, you know, kind of another level. But you know, prayer, I've experienced healing from prayer on levels that, you know, are kind of hard to describe sometimes.
Yeah, and my belief about prayer is it's not just that prayer is some great mechanism. I mean, I believe it is, but that's not where it ends for me with prayer. Prayer is connecting to the spiritual. Prayer is connecting to the miraculous. Well, that's what everybody wants, right? They don't want to struggle for the next 8 months in pain every day as they work through these issues that hurt to think about. No, we want it to change fast. Well,
yeah.
The miraculous can do that. I'm not saying it always does, but it absolutely can, and I've seen it many times in my life and other people's lives as well. So, hey, if I can have the miraculous heal my problem as opposed to hard work for 3 months, I would choose the miraculous every time. Well, that's prayer. And what I would say is don't just do one, do both. So pray and use the tools.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really it for me. I mean, I could talk to you forever, but.
Well, great to hear your voice. Keep Canada in line for us, you bunch of rabble rousers. Those crazy Canadians. I'll never forget. Hope and I went to Canada on a vacation with the boys, and we were going to drive to Niagara Falls, and We were on what in America would be called interstate, and it absolutely drove all four of us almost completely insane, because for like 4 hours, no one was driving over like 35 miles an hour, and this was on interstate, and we kept thinking, oh, there's got to be a wreck or construction up here. There was no wreck or construction. It was just the Canadian conservatism. And it about drove us insane. But very, very nice people, though.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what province you were in or city?
We were in Toronto.
All right. I was going to say, yeah, Toronto is probably the worst place in Canada for that.
Yeah. But anyway, nice people, but you can drive faster than 35.
Yeah.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, reminded of working with a client of mine who has been experiencing mainly a lot of sexual assaults, abuse as a young child.
Yeah.
And also later in life, you know, also there was more verbal abuse, but sexual abuse as a young child. And she said one thing to me. She said, you know, when that happens to you, especially because so much of that happens by, you know, the people that are really close to you, the people that are supposed to be loving you, caring for you, protecting you. And she said, one of the things that you learn when it happens to you as a young child, that you do not have the right to say no.
Yeah.
That is something that is taken away from you. And then later in life, you really have to learn to reclaim that right. And that is, of course, where a lot of healing needs to take place.
Yeah, it's a similar phenomenon to the thing that everybody's heard, which is when there's a divorce, the children tend to blame themselves.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it is absolutely weird and scary how true that is. And I've almost never seen an exception. And I mean, the parents can handle it perfectly and say, now, none of this is your fault. You have nothing to do with this. This is between me and your mother. But when that kid gets in my counseling office, they're blaming themselves. It is unbelievable. And and during that growing up period where, you know, it's a little kid against an authoritative parent, you know, the first few years you've got the Delta Theta thing going on where the kid is not capable of even logicking that this is not my fault. They just take whatever the parent says and that's it. Well, and the negative. But then the other part is just the inequity. You know, when you're 13, trying to argue with a 45-year-old, it's very, very difficult to do. And if you want to know more about that and you're listening to this, Google transactual analysis. And it's a type of therapy where they break everything down as far as communication into parent, adult, and child. And the problems come every time when it is a parent to adult, or I'm sorry, a parent to child or child to parent interaction. The healthy interactions are adult to adult, and it doesn't matter what the age is. But the great majority of negative of things that lead to negative traumas is parent child or child parent when it shouldn't be. But anyway, I think you'll understand more if you Google that and study up on it, that how we interact with people. Like if a parent is speaking down to a child, there's almost nothing the child can do to combat that. They just don't have what they need yet in order to deal with that. So it becomes negative and blaming themselves and anger and trauma and all of that, where if it had happened at 25, it might have been a very different situation.
Yeah.
All okay, right. Well, Johanna, we probably need to let some people get customs, don't we?
Well, yeah. I'm not. If Taya wants to do that,
you can still do it. But people have been wanting to take part in the discussion, of course. But if you want a custom code, raise your hand, okay, or do it on the Q&A. So far, I have been. We have another hand raised up.
Okay.
So I'm opening your line. Joe, your line is open.
Al, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Joe.
Hey, Joe. Man, yeah. Y'all even sound alike.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird.
Everybody, Joe is Santo's brother, and they're twins. It's really freaky looking at them on Zoom together.
Reacts.
Except Santo's always eating. Joe's not always eating, but Santo's always eating.
I got to look professional because, like, you hired us. I can't, can't do that.
What's up, Joe?
Well, no, I just heard Santo on the call with you guys, and I had a question. I'm not sure if, like, they have to be particularly related to the newsletter topic. But,
oh, that's all right. Go ahead.
So maybe the one issue I've kind of been dealing with the longest and probably that I've done the most with on the codes is this idea of, like, just general connection with other people.
Yeah, wanting that or too much connection?
Like, wanting that, I would
say. Okay, go ahead.
So, like, growing up, it was kind of like a weird situation where I never felt like I had a really deep connection with, like, my family, even though, like, we're always around, like, doing stuff together. But it never got to the point where it's like, oh, like, I'm absolutely, like, definitely, like, in love with my family or, like, you know, in love with the other people. And I think that kind of manifested itself, like, later in life where I've kind of been trying to, like, you know, find a significant other to, I don't know if subconsciously to, like, fill that void, because I think the pleasures that come with that type of relationship can, like, substitute for that. And I guess, you know, wanting it for that kind of reason is probably the reason that I'm not successful in that area. So kind of grappling with all that is kind of, you know. So.
Well, I think the thing that creates deep connection is loving conversation and vulnerability. One of kind of the definitions of love is I'm going to make myself vulnerable to you. And if you want to hurt me, you'll be able to, because I'm going to make myself vulnerable to me. Now, that That's not in all situations. If someone has been abused in certain ways, I would not recommend doing that, or at least they're not ready to do that yet until some of that stuff can be healed. But if you don't have that, one of the best ways I know for that to happen is to say to the person, hey, could we talk about some different kind of issues? Could we talk about, you know, some personal, spiritual, you know, sort of issues? If they say no, then don't do it with them. If they say okay, then I would say you jump into the deep end first and share something vulnerable about yourself. Now, you know, I would want to feel reasonably safe with that person before doing that. But when you do that, it does something in the person's heart. When someone has something shared with them that they know, I could hurt this person with this if I wanted to, and that they are telling me something that is very important to them, and, you know, we talk about buttons. You know, they punched my buttons. This is one of this person's buttons, and instead of protecting it, they're letting me have access to it. It does something inside. It makes you care for that person to a certain degree, and you know, love, especially romantic love, is a very strange thing. I dated quite a few girls in high school and college and right after college. And Hope is a beautiful young lady. In fact, she was a beauty queen, literally. But I dated other girls that were just as beautiful as Hope. But with Hope, I knew. I told my brother before we ever had our first date, I'm going out with a girl Friday night that I'm going to marry. And I didn't have any doubt about it. And I'd never said anything like that before in my life. Now, how did I know that? I don't know. Some of these love things are beyond the common sense of knowing how that happened. And why her and not one of the other girls that were just as pretty as she was? I don't know. But it was her. And it's that way with everybody. So I think the thing that at least prepares the soil for something like that happening is kind, truthful, loving, and you might say deep conversation. I also know a wonderful technique that I used to do at workshops all the time. I call it instant intimacy. And with instant intimacy, both people have to agree to it. And it's where you and another person are face-to-face. Maybe let's say your noses are like 4 inches apart or something like that. Or it could be even closer. And in the exercise, you are going to look in the other person's eyes and nowhere else, okay? You can't look anywhere except directly in that other person's eyes. And what you do is once somebody says go, you look in that person's eyes deeply and you think positive, kind, and loving things about them. Like, I think you're a wonderful person. I think you're beautiful. I love the way that you're kind to people. I like the way that you love animals and are so kind and caring to animals. I really appreciate your personality and that kind of stuff. And you do it for like, it can be very intense. You do it for just a minute or two and then take a break. And then you can do it for another minute or two and take a break. And, man, I have seen some of the most wonderful long-term relationships of all time start with that little exercise. And also having kind, truthful, loving, deep conversations rather than just talking about world events or the weather or, you know, stuff like that. And I'm talking share your hopes, share your dreams, share your the first date Hope and I ever had. We went to the park, put a blanket on the ground, and we talked for over 4 hours, just talked about our past, our present, our future, our dreams, our hopes, things we're afraid of. And I mean, we were engaged like 2 months later, married 9 months later, and now it's been 34 years. So those are a couple things I'd say to that, Joe.
Got it. Okay. I will do the codes on that.
And if you do the instant intimacy thing with Santo, I want to see it.
I don't know. It's like it's kind of like with us, we don't even say happy birthday to each other because it feels like you're just saying happy birthday to yourself.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Well, thanks for the info. I will get back to work on your email.
Okay. And Thea, Johanna, I guess we're out of time, right?
We are, and I need to go to another call. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Thea, Santo, Johanna. Thank you, everyone.
God bless you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for the wonderful input. And have a wonderful rest of the week.